candidates debate today. We're testing out our new sound system, so I hope there's not going to be too much feedback. We haven't used this very much yet. So the schedule for today is that we're going to have, from now until about 8:30, we're going to have questions. We're going to have the candidates do a formal debate type thing. We're going to start out where each candidate is going to have 4 minutes to give an introduction. Then we're going to have question and answer. And the question and answer is going to work like this. You can line up at the microphone with your questions, and then you have two options. Either you can state your question, and you'll have a minute to state your question, or if you don't feel comfortable being on the audio, because we are recording this and we're planning to put this on the internet, then Margaret, who is over there, has some sheets over there, and if you can write your question clearly on that, then we'll read the question and then you won't be on the audio. So after the question has been asked, then each candidate is going to get a minute and a half to respond. If one candidate mentions another by name, there's going to be a 30-second rebuttal, and then we'll go through each of the candidates. You may direct a question to a particular candidate, in which case that candidate may answer first, but any candidate is going to have the opportunity to answer any question. Then towards the end, in the last 15 minutes, we'll have closing statements, which are going to be 2 minutes long each. And then around 8:30, we're going to break the formal part of this all candidates meeting, and then we'll have a meet and greet for a meet and greet so you can, you know, 90 seconds is not a lot of time for a candidate to give a response on a particular topic. So if you want to investigate further with the candidate or you'd like to bring up some other issues that weren't covered in this, then you'll have an opportunity to do that. I guess I should tell you who I am and who the candidates are. My name is Paul Nitter, and I'll be your moderator tonight, somewhat unexpectedly. We have our timekeeper here. His name is Jason, and he has signs there when you're asking your question and when the candidates are responding the question. He has signs and also a timeout tambourine that he will shake if people are going over time. There we go. And then I've already introduced you to Margaret. And now the people who you actually came here to see. We're going to, in the order that we picked numbers from, first we have David Kuhn, Sandy McFarlane, Frank Etherington, Graham Yates, and Debbie Chapman. And then we'll be rotating through that order in order to have the questions. So we can, if Jason is ready, then we can start with opening statements from David Kuhn.
Good evening. First, I want to start off by saying thank you for everyone who's in attendance tonight. And I also want to thank the Working Center for volunteering to host this debate. Thank you. And this is something that's very important. I just want to start off by saying that I think that communication has really been lacking when it comes to municipal politics and getting information out to the citizens and the residents of Kitchener. And so I think that forums like this are great because people get a chance to talk with the candidates individually and hear what we all have to say. And I think this is especially great tonight that it is being recorded so that even more people will get a chance to hear what has been said and the questions asked. I just want to continue by saying, as Paul said, my name is David Kuhn. I am a lifelong resident of Kitchener. I was born in Ward 9, and I spent most of my life down here. I'm a graduate of Cameron Heights Collegiate, and I, right after high school, when I graduated, I got my first full-time job that was also in the downtown core. So as such, I've been able to see life from many different angles, both as a resident, just living in the ward, also as a student, and then as somebody who was an employee working in the ward. Currently, I am a student at Conestoga College. I have taken a bit of a break to run for city council and run to be the representative of Ward 9. And I intend to return to my studies in business, regardless of the outcome of the coming elections. And currently, I do not live in the ward, but as I said, I've grown up here, and I have many friends here. I have family that live in the ward, so I'm very well connected, and I'm down here as much as I can be for the various festivals and the various events that are in the downtown area and in different parts of Ward 9. Gotta love the feedback. Anyway, so thank you all again for coming, and I look forward to answering your questions.
Okay. Thank you, David. Next in line, we have Sandy McFarland.
Thank you. Good evening. I want to thank everybody for coming tonight. My name is Sandy McFarland. I declared my nomination to run for councillor in Ward 9 on January 5th of this year. I'm running because I believe that this ward needs a strong voice on its city council. This election is a tipping point for Kitchener. There is a great opportunity for this community to be a leader as far as job opportunities, as far as financial transparency and safety. And Ward 9 can be the lead the way in this. As your councillor, I will make sure the voices of the people are heard and the city council is completely transparent in everything they do. I will bring the decisions and the discussions that are in the back rooms of City Hall, and I will bring them out of the back rooms into the people of this ward. Taxpayers must know where their money is going. Not only where it's going, but what it is getting spent on, every penny. They must have a voice on how that money is being spent as well. My priority is to bring businesses to the downtown core, lower the unemployment rate, and help take the pressure off our social services. I want people to live, work, and play in Ward 9. To live, we need available, affordable housing, reasonable taxation, and complete financial transparency and accountability by our councillors. To work, we need new businesses and job opportunities in this ward. With McMaster University and the University of Waterloo opening campuses in this ward, this is a huge opportunity for us. We must be able to retain the potential of these up-and-coming professionals. To play, we need to make sure our parks are safe and clean, and all the recreation facilities are available to all residents and are well-maintained. As your counselor, I will work to improve the quality of life in Ward 9 and make it a great place to live, work, and play. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sandy McFarland. Next, with our shared mic, we're going to have Frank Etherington.
Yeah, Frank Etherington. I would like to commend the Working Centre and Friends for organizing this event and thank both of them and my fellow Ward 9 candidates for the time and effort they have contributed to this election. At a time when voter turnout in our municipal election has plummeted to 25%, I would also thank you all for coming here tonight. It's very heartening to see people so engaged in such an important event. My wife and I have lived beside Victoria Park, an area we love, for 28 years. We invested in the downtown by purchasing and renovating a dilapidated old home built in 1904. I know Ward 9 and the city, where I've written about hundreds of neighborhood and social issues. I've been a local journalist for the past 38 years, during which I hope I occasionally shape public opinion. I became a journalist convinced the media should cover social issues and stand up for those who don't have a voice. Remembering what it's like to be a child who grew up in a poor family has influenced my entire life and my journalism. I'm certain it would influence me as a counselor. I've always been affected by the devastating impact poverty can have on kids and adults, and always been committed to providing a voice for those families. In this diverse ward, my writing has also focused on challenges including poverty and employment faced by thousands of refugees and new Canadians coming to Waterloo Region. It has involved articles dealing with unemployment, daycare, and affordable housing. I've written about homeless and marginalized street people. My venture into books and drama for children also touched on the need for caring communities, as I wrote about the Bridgeport General an eccentric crossing guard who could have been a street person if the village around him had not provided food and support he needed to live independently. My play featured the former Anna Kalyas, who, before she died, provided loving care for hundreds of disadvantaged people at her Kitchener rooming houses. Writing about these and other issues, I often found myself within the ever-widening orbit of Kitchener's Downtown Working Center, a unique agency immersed for 28 years in an impressive range of inclusive community-building work. In areas including everything from transitional housing, some of it above our heads in this building, to psychiatric reach and St. John's Kitchen, I found myself connecting with the Working Center. My desire to give voice to these issues and be among those building an inclusive community where no one is left out is one of the reasons I want to be Ward 9 councillor. I've often been critical of City Council, and now I want to put my money where my mouth is. Ward 9 deserves representation from a full-time councillor. At a time when our neighborhoods are in transition, my change of approach involves putting community interests first while taking a clear stand on issues. I've learned what a huge difference courageous individuals can make in our communities. I've watched and offered journalistic support when groups, several here in Ward 9, have gone to City Hall to protect and nurture the quality of those neighborhoods. With your support, I will make a similar difference as councillor, and thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Frank Etherington. Next, we have Graham Yates.
Good evening.
Maybe a little closer.
Good evening. I'll be brief. I'm far more interested in listening to your questions than I am in our speeches this evening. Studies have shown that when it comes to municipal politics, two main features influence people's votes: character and experience. I feel quite safe in saying that the character of myself and my five colleagues, and don't let the attendance this evening fool you, there are six of us in total, is a noble thing. We all appear to be honorable men and women looking to serve their communities and their neighborhoods and better the city. Character does not appear to be a problem. We have a plethora of it. Experience is a slightly different issue. I feel I stand apart from my colleagues in this area. None of them have had the opportunity to sit on the councils and committees I have, advising City Council in areas of arts and culture and heritage, as well as some financial matters. None of them have had the opportunity to be recognized by City Council for that service and awarded personally. Likewise, none of them have seemed to have sat on large region-dependent arts and culture bodies. And I think that's something you might want to consider on the 25th. Thank you.
Thank you, Graham Yates. The next candidate is going to be Debbie Chapman.
Good evening. I want to thank you all for coming here to this event tonight. My name is Debbie Chapman, and I would like to take this opportunity, first of all, to commend the Working Center for the great work it does in this community. I have come into contact with the Working Center in different ways over the years. Most recently, Joe Mancini came to speak at my class at Laurier about the work that they do here, and also to invite my students to come and volunteer their services in this center. I have attended events organized by the Working Center and events held at St. John's Kitchen. Recycle Cycles attended the Cherry Festival last year and again this year. I have also eaten many a meal at Queen Street Commons, and I highly recommend it. I think that the Working Center does great work, and as a city councillor, I would like to ensure that they have the resources to continue doing what they do. As a resident of Ward 9 and as a candidate for councillor, I take civil responsibility very seriously. I have lived in Kitchener for over 38 years and have been involved in grassroots politics for over 20 years. For the past 4 years, I have been president of the Cherry Park Neighborhood Association. During this time, I have helped transform what was thought of as a crime-ridden neighborhood into a desirable area. Through our efforts, we now have a community garden, an annual cleanup barbecue, a corn boil, and a cherry festival. We have worked with a very diverse group of people and welcomed everyone to participate in our events and to volunteer their time to the community. At the Cherry Festival, we have had a women's Indigenous drumming group open the event and a Hispanic children's choir perform on stage. We had volunteers from many different ethnic and socioeconomic backgrounds. When we talk about diversity, we also consider accessibility. We include people with physical challenges, linguistic challenges, and make sure that to the best of our ability, that nobody is excluded. Our youth drop-ins attract kids from all walks of life. I have worked in partnerships with 1KCI, the Asgard Green Housing Cooperative, the KW Badminton Club, and local churches to set up and run programs that foster a sense of community. I have worked also jointly with residents and City Hall on resolving local problems. This experience has taught me the value of collaboration and convinced me that the city of Kitchener is a city of possibilities. But my concerns about Ward 9 reach beyond the neighborhood association boundaries. Over the past 4 years, I have attended meetings on issues such as the cleanup and restoration of Victoria Park, the proposal to close the Rockaway Senior Center, of which I opposed, and I have also attended neighborhood summits and the Festival of Neighborhoods. My years of outreach work have taught me a lot about the issues and about the internal workings of City Hall. They have also taught me a lot about what people's needs are. There's no excuse for the fact that in this region, there are over 3,500 households on a community housing waiting list, or that almost 13,000 people access emergency food services on a regular basis. As an elected representative of this city, I would work to ensure that there is adequate housing for everyone in need, and to work to find innovative ways to stimulate the economy and create full-time jobs. I would advocate greater inclusiveness and public participation. As someone who has worked in both the private and public sectors, is now a part-time professor at Laurier.
I'm afraid your 4 minutes are
complete,
so if you can finish your one sentence.
Okay, I approach issues holistically, which means that I understand that behind every decision a councillor makes, there are people that matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie Chapman. As Graham Yates mentioned in his opening statements, there is one more candidate who's running. His name is John Schill, and he was not able to be with us tonight. Okay, that is the opening statements. Now we can move into question and answers. So, to review, we have a microphone up here at the front. You can line up and ask your questions. If you would prefer to have your question written down, or if you would prefer not to appear in the audio for redistribution later, then please write your question down. Maybe Margaret could come up to the front where she's, and she has some cards there for you to fill out. If you do want to state your question out loud, then we are going to be timing it, and so that we don't get too many speeches, it'll be a minute. And Jason there has some signs that he will be putting up to warn you when there's 30 seconds and 10 seconds left. So, not all at once, but you can come up and ask some questions. Microphone at the front, please come. Can we check that the microphone is on and works? Are we on? Can you just talk?
Can you state whether you have or if you will be accepting any donations from developers or anyone directly connected to the development industry?
Okay. We will start with Sandy McFarlane and go across.
Sorry, the question was...
Have you accepted or can you state whether you have or if you will be accepting any donations from developers, right, or anyone directly connected to the development industry? So has there been any donations or have you got it planned as such from developers?
No, I've never accepted donations from any businesses, and I certainly don't plan on doing it in the future. That just does not. That seems self-serving, so that's not my style. It's more for the people that I'm representing, not for myself. So no.
Okay, Frank Etherington.
No, we have a policy in our campaign where we're not taking any donations from any businesses, any union groups, the Labor Council.
Are we okay?
This wins me some extra time, I think.
Yeah, I hope so.
So our policy is not to accept those donations, and no, I never will. Thank you.
Okay, Graham Yates.
Thank you very much for the question. I think it's quite clearly one about transparency in these elections, and that's always a wonderful thing to look at. I can state not only no, what I accept, nor have I accepted any donations from a development or anyone connected to development, nor would I accept or have accepted any donations from anyone in business. I actually have a policy of accepting no donations whatsoever, and have had turned down several, even just from concerned individuals. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Yates. Debbie Chapman?
Yes. No, I have not received any money from any developer. That does not imply that I would not engage in discussion with developers. I think that they're part of the city, the development of the city, and they're important stakeholders, but I would not accept any money from them whatsoever. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. David Kuhn?
No, I have not accepted any donations from any developers. And in terms of if I am elected to council, no, I would not accept any donations from anyone looking to do business with the city, where my opinion would bear any weight in that. And I would be supportive of some sort of registry for lobbyists and any groups when they're dealing with councillors, so that they would have to let it be known, you know, if they have given any donations and who they've spoken with, and if any anything has come from that in terms of monetary gifts or personal gifts of any nature, and anything like that. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, David. Can we have a next question? Do we have any? Oh, I can. Okay, here's a question from the floor. Just a quick question. If elected, what other job obligations will you have to balance in with your position as councillor? So, we can start with Frank Etherington.
I'd be a full-time councillor. I have no job obligations. I'm a retired journalist now, and so I would give the position all of the time that it deserves. And I don't think you can be a councillor part-time. Thank you.
Graham Yates?
The position currently is listed as a part-time position and is set up that way. In my research before submitting my name for nomination, I found that your average counselor probably does about 35 to 40 hours a week between committees, council meetings, events. Currently, I work at the University of Waterloo, and whether or not I would stay there would obviously depend on the needs of council. I'd love to say that, no, I would do one thing or the other, but until I've been a counselor, I really don't know how those needs will affect my schedule. I can tell you, unequivocally, that should it come down to a choice, obviously council wins.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Yates. Debbie Chapman.
Yes, hi. I'm a multitasker, as are most women, and I would work as a counselor at least three quarters of the time, but I also teach one course, and I will continue to teach one course a term at Laurier, and I am doing that right now, and I'm able to balance both, even though I'm probably putting in about 70 hours a week in on my campaign. So I will continue to work in a similar vein. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Debbie Chapman. David Kuhn?
As I said in my opening, I am a part-time student at Conestoga College, and Whether or not I'm elected, I continue on, or I plan to continue with my studies. You know, as has been mentioned, this is listed as a part-time position. It is something that I agree does take a lot of time and effort and energy. But at the same time, I mean, we have people that are single parents. We have people that are current, you know, that are current politicians, members of parliament, provincial members of parliament that I know of that do school part-time, whether it's online or whether it's, you know, a couple classes a week and whatnot. There is a way to balance your personal life and the needs to represent the residents of Ward 9, and that is what I plan to do if elected the councillor for Ward 9.
Okay, thank you, David Kuhn. Sandy McFarland.
I got really loud there. As I stated in the beginning, I believe this election is, in the next 4 years, is a huge time for this city, so it would be my only obligation.
Okay, thank you, candidates. Do we have another question either for the mic or from... Oh, we have one from the mic. Let's take one from the mic. Speak clearly into the mic, and hopefully we won't get feedback.
I'm sure you're all very
a little bit closer.
Substantial little... citizens, and I don't doubt that. The only people who came to my door were Ms. Chapman and Mr. Etherington, and both of them engaged me in good conversations, in intriguing conversations that answered some of my queries. So I have a sort of a zinger for you, which is, no one doubts that you're of substance, right? My question is, what is the one thing that you would do that is creative, that speaks to your imagination, not just to your civic duty for the city of Kitchener?
Okay, thank you for that question. I think we're starting with Graham Yates.
My round. When it comes to the arts, the craft movement, I tend not to be a maker. I tend to be a facilitator. That's why a lot of my creative endeavors have been dramatic in nature, organizational in nature, administrative perhaps. I guess I would bring that organizational niche within creativity to bear and try and facilitate the growth of organizations that use shared space. To have many artists under one roof. We have a number of success stories in Kitchener, such as the Globe Studios, such as Quartz Lab, using again, shared space to allow artists and sometimes social entrepreneurs to connect, not only bounce artistic ideas off each other, but just share the rent, share the use of the phone line. And that way it can be... Thank you. It can be creative and growthful for the entire community.
Thank you, Graham Yates. Debbie Chapp.
Yes, as a community person, we do a lot of very creative things with the Neighborhood Association. But I'm going to focus right now on environmental creativity, if I can call it that. Recently, I was in Montreal, and they have bike lanes that have a curb that separates, in the downtown core, separates the bikes from the cars. And I think this was a wonderful idea. It was a very safe environment for bikers. It was safe for pedestrians because bikers were on the road. It was safe for cars and bikes combined because they weren't interacting on the same surface. So that's one thing I would do. But another thing I'd like to consider, and of course it would have to be researched further, is the idea of green roofs. I think there are examples in Toronto where there's a new bylaw that new buildings, certain buildings have to have green roofs. And I would like to see how feasible that is and initially start with looking at government buildings of all provincial, federal, and municipal and regional new buildings that come into the area and try the green roof idea. And with existing buildings, of course, it could be gardens on the roofs, at least as an initial attempt at greening the roofs in the city. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Debbie Chapman, David Kuhn.
Thanks. That's a great quote. That's a great question, and good for your first time, too. So thank you again. And personally, something that I would like to see is, and this might sound stereotypical coming from me, given that I am a younger individual, but I'd like to see something more for youth. So maybe an area where they have, and I know somebody mentioned the arts, and that's something that I think is very important, and we should showcase. You know, I think we need a public venue where we can showcase work from young artists, which could be something like maybe a mural or something that that a space where people can create their artwork, and we could set something up where it's up for a set amount of time, you know, maybe a couple of weeks, and then we clean it up and make way for someone else to showcase their individual talents, and that's something that I would definitely like to work towards.
Okay, thank you, David Kuhn. Sandy McFarland.
Thanks for your question. It's a good one. I think there's a massive opportunity with the two schools that are in Ward 9 right now for that to be a hub of activity. I think as far as the creative side, creativity is in everything. I mean, I think just making that area an activity, a hub of activity for people with different shops and different restaurants and cafes, and they definitely need a grocery store in that area. I think you can be creative in the design of how that's going to be laid out there. And kind of on the other end, I have been an amateur stand-up comic for 2 years now, and I'm getting together with local comedians to try and get a comedy festival in the downtown area for summer of 2011. So I'll get back to you on that part in 2011. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Sandy McFarland. Frank Etherington.
Thanks for the question. Last week's report about Waterloo Region's vital signs shows poverty has declined slightly. The question gives me a chance to get on one of my favorite soapboxes. That document reports that we still have an unacceptable number of adults and children, particularly children, living in poverty in a very wealthy region. How can we tolerate a situation where we have 8% of kids living below the poverty line? That figure is made up from 11,650 children under the age of 14 and another 10,425 young people between 15 and 24, all of them living in poverty. As your counselor, I would try to create, and that would be my level of, my target of creativity, I would try to create a city that could set an example to the entire country, finding ways to drastically reduce, or perhaps even eliminate that kind of child poverty. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you, Frank Etherington. Next question, did we ask? Yeah, I'm losing track already myself. Okay, next question.
Hi there. I think something going forward that any government should provide is infrastructure, which allows everything to grow. And certainly there's a bit of a debate now about whether the light rail transit should happen or not due to some additional monies that we maybe have to pay. Do you think it's reasonable that we should be doing this? Is it important to invest in the infrastructure, or do we just say it's too expensive? I'd just like to put that out to everybody.
Okay, thank you for the question. We'll start with Debbie Chapman.
Can I just ask for a clarification on your question?
Sure.
Are you referring to light rail transit in particular? Okay.
Yeah, which will be running through Ward 9.
Right. Okay, thank you. As we know, the regional government has agreed to contribute a portion of the fee to bring in light rail transit, as has the federal government. But we're left with a $230 million tag for the project to proceed. I think, first of all, it's a regional question for regional councillors, not municipal. But on the same token, I would, as a municipal councillor, I would not support the municipality contributing to that project. But if the regional council approves of the project, given their budget, which I'm not familiar with, then I would certainly work with the regional government to make sure that the needs of Kitchener residents are met as that project moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie Chapman. David Kuhn.
Great question. And, you know, this is something that always comes up, and it might, you know, none of us really here have a lot of time to be as forthcoming, or at least personally, this is a big issue, in my opinion. And to talk about it in such a short time is, it's very hard to do. So if anybody has additional questions that I can't cover, please talk to me, and as well check out my website, because I do have a detailed position on there where I do stand on the LRT. But personally, I think that the price tag is too high right now. And when this first came up, it was, you know, about $400 million, and it's since doubled. So as a city councilor, I do not support the city of Kitchener and the citizens and the taxpayers of Kitchener shelling out money for a project that seemingly, as of right now, has no ceiling that we really know of. And I think it's unfair to say that, you know, that the price tag is only $235 million, because as I've said, we've seen it go up. And it is a regional issue, but I think it's not right, and it's really unfair to the residents of Ward 9 to pass the buck and say, well, it's a regional issue, so we don't really have any say in it. You know, it is our responsibility as city councillors, if we are elected or if I am elected a city councillor, to speak on behalf of the residents of Ward 9. So, as I said, please speak with me after, because this is an important issue. Thank you.
Thank you, David Kuhn. Sandy McFarland.
Thanks for the question. It's I can't believe how this has become the number one issue of this campaign. And to say that it won't come down to municipal government, I think it will. I think there's enough pressure on the regional government right now, and so many people are talking about it, that it will come down to each city's council in Waterloo and Kitchener. And my problem with it is they are going to ask for more money, and we can't spend any more money. We can't be taxed again to support this. The money the federal government, provincial government is giving us doesn't have to go towards that train. It can go towards our existing public transit. It can go to other transit issues. I do not support the proposal they have right now, and I can't see me changing my mind on that. I think a lot of the arguments they have on their side, they put the example of Calgary and Ottawa and Hull have those trains. The difference is those cities have 100,000 commuters into their downtown. So right now, no, we just can't afford it right now.
Okay, thank you, Sandy McFarland. Frank Etherington.
Again, thanks for the question. It is an issue that will have a major impact on Kitchener, and it's the first subject Ward 9 residents ask about every time I'm out canvassing. On a positive note, such debate is a healthy example of democracy in action, and it's one that I don't think would have happened if we had not been approaching an election. No matter what happens, we will end up with a solution that has engaged and better informed everyone, and that includes regional councillors. I don't like opposing something that will have environmental benefits as the region expands. I support public transit. I support moves to control suburban sprawl and intensify development along King, but I'm against building more expressways. I'm opposed to the light rail proposal because I don't believe we can afford the $800 million cost. Now we know federal and provincial governments will contribute $565 million of our cash. That means local taxpayers will have to find at least another $235 million. I say at least because I'm concerned the eventual cost will climb to $1.5 billion or thereabouts. I don't like debt, and I don't like property tax increases of between 6 and 10% to pay for light rail. Those who support such a solution should come with me and talk to Ward 9 seniors living on fixed incomes who are struggling to stay in their homes.
Okay, time is
Unless
up.
Some solution is found to those LRT costs, the best option, in my opinion, is a rapid bus system. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank Etherington. Graham Yates.
I love trains. Trains are great. Nothing would please me more to see more trains come between Kitchener and other cities, and trains to Guelph, trains to Toronto, trains to London. Within the city, however, it's quite a luxury, and these are not luxurious times. I couldn't support the added expense of an LRT, especially when we have a relatively efficient transit system that could be more efficient, pardon me, by some simple, creative changes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Graham Yates. Do we have another question? Oh. You can also line up for questions if you'd like to avoid scrambling.
It feels odd speaking to a microphone when you're so close. In our neighborhood, it's close to Mill and Cortland, we've had the sidewalks torn up in the couple of years, 3-4 times. It just takes the entire summer. Different organizations, I guess different services come in, they do their construction, they leave a few months later, another group comes in, they do their construction, and it just becomes a continuous round of construction all summer long. As appreciative as I am that our community is being, upgraded or improved along the way, what sort of measures can you see towards coordinating these services so that it's a one-time construction for all of the different changes that our communities are experiencing?
Okay, thank you for that question. We're starting with David Kuhn, I think.
Good question, and thank you for that. As someone with a physical disability, I should say, I was going to say a mobility device, but as someone who gets around using a wheelchair, I understand better than most people might what it's like trying to get around with construction and with all the development that does happen. That being said, I think it's really hard to say that it'll be a one-time thing for sidewalks. And that being said, I would work to make sure that we do communicate, the council does communicate with the residents to gauge opinion and gauge feelings to any construction that does have to happen. But as I said, I think it's irresponsible to say that we won't have, we'll have a one-time construction, because as we all know, stuff happens and things, wear down, and we have to make sure that we are keeping up with making sure that sidewalks are usable.
That's time.
And thank you.
Sandy McFarland.
That's a great question. I experienced it myself this summer. I live at Glasgow and Park Street. It seemed like every week there a new street in my neighborhood was getting torn up. On the good side of it is I really had to take a lot of different routes, so I got to meet a lot of new people. But the frustration level, I completely understand. And I think the city needs to be very diligent with the contractors that they have, and they have to. There has to be timelines, and not just. I know some things do happen, and sometimes things have to be stalled a little bit, but there needs to be more efficiency in the way that they do it, and that has to come from pressure from the city, because it's the city that's paying them to do it. I think there needs to be we have to be a little more stern with that. Thanks for the question.
Okay, thank you. Frank Etherington.
Thanks very much. I think the question relates to the suggestion that city workers tear up sidewalks and roads over and over and over and over. And I've often heard this, and I've often wondered about it. We had a work crew in front of our house tearing up the road and the sidewalks. They did an excellent job. They did it on schedule. They really cooperated with residents. They could not have been better. The only thing they did wrong was create a skating rink at the end of every driveway because of the angle they put on the sidewalk. But that suggestion that the city, you know, digs property up over and over and over, I've often been curious about that. I think it would work to the city's advantage if they brought out a written description of the work that was going to happen in front of residents' homes and worked with the residents as the work went ahead and explained to residents why certain things were being done, because I think the city often gets a bum rap on some of those projects. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Graham Yates.
I think the question clearly illustrates inefficient communication within City Hall and within the regional government. Anytime you have multiple services revisiting a single site, it's just not an excellent use of resources. Obviously, efficient communication is the type of thing that any public leader would like to solve. Pedestrians are the lifeblood of any city. Their safety is paramount. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Debbie Chow.
All governments have a bureaucracy, and one characteristic of bureaucracies are that there are different departments, and departments don't think or look beyond what's in front of them. I think this is a big problem, and I would like to see better communication both between the many, among the many different departments at City Hall to avoid such uncertainty and interruption in our lives, and also better communication between regional roads and regional road needs and city road needs, which also come to disrupt our daily lives. I also think there's virtue in having better understanding of long-term plans so that we don't do short-term plans, tear up today, close, and then the next plan comes months or years down the road. So I think there are ways that this can be managed, but I think communication is a big thing and also planning, which I would want to keep an eye on.
Okay, thank you. Can we have another question?
This question is about, I'm just curious if you have suggestions on how the community can better be engaged around issues that affect them than have been done in the past. And I'll give a couple of examples. There was the Culture Plan 2 that came about, and they had hundreds of people involved, and people gave time and energy towards that. And it's not me. I had experience with the system. That said, ultimately they dissolved it down, they distillated it down to a couple of things and eventually gave a report and it was all over and nothing really, really came out of that. That said, again, I'm asking how one might better engage, really engage inclusively the community and not just go through the motions, if you will.
Okay, thank you for that question. Are we okay with sound? Okay, hopefully we're okay with sound. Start off with Stanley McFarland.
That's a great question. I think this council, as one of my points, is needs to be completely transparent and accountable to the people in the wards that they are representing. I believe that we need more community involvement as far as neighborhoods and neighborhood associations to bring basically every matter to the people. That's been a major problem in this council for years, that decisions have been made without talking to the people that it's affecting. The LRT is a great example, actually. That started 2 years ago, was brought to the region. So I think as far as engagement, there is a lot of opportunities right now for counselors to be engaged to the residents in their ward. Neighborhood associations, weekly meetings, and social networking such as Facebook and Twitter, so people know exactly how the residents of their ward feel about certain issues. I believe that our local news agencies don't report as much as they should on some of the issues that affect the people of every ward. As a counselor in Ward 9, I would make sure the voices of the people of Ward 9 are heard.
Okay.
Thank you.
Frank Etherington.
Just to follow right through with Sandy's comment, I think an issue like this has to be better treated by both the city has a full-time public relations office and a media officer. I know from as someone who has worked for the newspaper that link with that office is pretty tenuous and pretty weak. I think both ends of that equation, the city and the news media, have a responsibility to cover in a much more thorough way the kind of item that was brought up by the questioner. And I think something has to be done about that. I would suggest that the people at the city have to take the time to meet with the local news media and insist that better coverage is provided and better information is circulated to let people know about this kind of issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Graham Yates.
I think in any issue like this, there's more than enough blame to go around. City Hall can do a better job of getting the word out. They can use social media as well as traditional medias, and they are now, and they've improved even in the past year. Likewise, I think the citizenry has to be less apathetic and more direct in their involvement with their own community. I put a lot of that apathy at the fact that our council has not changed much recently. Fortunately, this election's really going to jumpstart that problem. We're going to have 70% minimum new council with the new wards and people choosing not to rerun. So I think this is a great time of fresh blood, fresh ideas through things like social media. And I think we're going to see a lot of change, a lot of positive change. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Debbie Chapman.
Yes, I think that community engagement goes beyond the media and beyond City Hall. It's about people. And the only way that we can have proper engagement is by going into the community and interacting with people. The city currently fails us immensely on this front. They'll bring us into auditoriums with bulletin boards, with option number one, option number two, give us a little piece of paper and say, which do you prefer? And write down your comments. They don't want to hear from us. We never see the follow-up of those results of those little pieces of paper that we submitted. And we're never really quite sure whether we were considered in the final results or whether the results that were given were predetermined before we even filled out our little piece of paper. And the justification of not engaging openly with people is because they don't want controversy. So I had a very personal experience with the Cherry Park Neighborhood Association and the renovation of Cherry Park. We were told, I asked that the city come in and give a presentation of the different options and then open the floor to discussion with the residents. And we were told, we don't want controversy. Well, we're talking about a park here. We're not talking about a life-threatening serious issue. It is a serious issue, but people need to be heard and taken and their comments taken into consideration when decisions are made. Thank you.
Thank you. David Kuhn.
Great question, and this is one of the reasons that really got me wanting to run for municipal candidate. And for me, I think it's unfair to say that City Hall, departments at City Hall need to communicate better and get information out better, and that the media, you know, should be doing a better job. It's not about the media. It's not about departments at City Hall. It's about what it really comes down to is our representatives on City Council speaking to the residents that they're supposed to be representing. And I talk about social media and I talk about Facebook, and I talk about websites on my, it's part of my platform and it's on my literature over on the table. But really, I think we need to do more to reach everyone. And I think one of the greatest ways we can do that is public suggestion boxes in public areas and community centers and libraries so that we can get direct feedback from people. And as well, you know, councillors, I believe, should be holding regular information sessions outside of City Hall so that they can talk with residents one-on-one and get personal opinions and feelings. And thank you.
Thank you. Okay, for the next question, I got a stack of questions here that were written out, so if I can do one of those, and then we'll get to another spoken question. The question is, how would you vote on the issue of amalgamation of Kitchener-Waterloo? So to start out, we can do Frank Etherington.
I'm in favor of any moves to eliminate waste and duplication like we see in the Kitchener-Waterloo fire departments. But because I've heard no convincing argument to support amalgamation, I'm against any such move. I'm skeptical it will save us money, and I don't anticipate it would increase efficiency. While I will respect any referendum decision by voters to support discussion of the subject, I'm concerned that that question represents the thin end of a wedge hammered home by non-elected people who already support amalgamation. I worry about the cost and amount of staff time that would be diverted into amalgamation talks. I also wonder about the numerous employee contracts affected in both municipalities. And I wonder why Kitchener, a city in reasonable financial shape, would choose to marry Waterloo, a municipality that, because of past mismanagement, has the highest per capita debt in Ontario. Finally, I believe an amalgamated council would reduce voter representation and further restrict easy access to our councillors. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Graham Yates.
Thank you to whoever sent this question. I was really hoping amalgamation would come on the docket this evening. Personally, I'm against amalgamation. I think if we're going to have any real meaningful savings through the lack of duplication, we have to do it at a regional level. And that simply can't happen without Cambridge, and they've been very clear in their disinterest. Also, I only feel comfortable with a good look at Waterloo's books. They've had some real financial troubles in the past. I think we all remember the Rim Park fiasco. And I'd like to know exactly what we're buying. All that set aside, we have an amalgamation referendum, which is wonderful. It's very rare that political officials get that direct will from the people. And I think anyone elected to any position that received that sort of direct voice of the masses would be a fool to ignore it, and I certainly would not. Also, this gives me a great opportunity to talk about just getting out to vote. I mean, if we're going to have a referendum, you don't want it representing 10 to 18% of the residents of the city, which is currently what we'd be looking at. We have to get our friends out to vote. We have to get our residents, our neighbors out to vote. And we have to get that vote out. Thank you.
Thank you. Debbie Chapman.
Yeah, I'm in favor of the referendum question. I think that it's an opportunity for us to exercise our democratic right. I think it's premature to respond to whether one supports or does not amalgamation because there are too many variables. There are too many unknowns, and it's only through the dialogue that it will come clear to all of us whether amalgamation is a worthwhile thing to engage in or not. One thing I do know is that according to many studies, amalgamation is not a cost-saving adventure, and it's something that we have to keep in mind when we go down this road. It's not that we're going to save money by amalgamating. I'd also like to be more well-informed about what the cost of this dialogue is going to cost taxpayers. Nobody's asked that question, and nobody's seems to be too concerned about it. But in order to engage in dialogue, we're going to need outside consultants and mediators to ensure that the process is transparent. I would also be happy to see certain services amalgamated, regardless of whether the two cities amalgamate or not, such as fire services and snow removal services. The final thing I would want to comment on is what the public consultation process is actually going to look like. We don't even know that. So these are just some of, I'm really not answering the question, I'm throwing out more questions, but I think it's difficult to come up with a concrete answer to that question.
Thank you. David Kuhn.
Yeah, you know, and this is something that always comes up. Now, the question that will be on the ballot is, should Kitchener and Waterloo engage in amalgamation talks? The question is, should we talk about it? Now, how anyone could be against talking, you know, I don't understand, you know, how that could be. Talking is a great thing, and that's what we want. We want to hear from people and gauge their opinions. So if it is said that Kitchener and Waterloo, you know, do want to talk about it, then it will be the responsibility of both city councils to get the information out there based on costs, based on services and all that, you know, to say to people, okay, this is what's going to happen if we amalgamate. This is how much it's going to cost. This is how much your property taxes are going to probably go up or lower or whatnot. And, yeah, now, you know, in terms of whether I think we need amalgamation or not, I believe that we need to look at our services and see, you know, the commonalities that can be worked at in the different municipalities. But I don't think that we need political amalgamation to do that. What we need to do is work with our counterparts in Waterloo and see what we can do to cooperate with services and and economic issues.
Time is up.
Thanks.
Thank you. Sandy McFarlane.
The question was if I would say yes to discussions, and I mean, going last on this question, I agree with basically mostly what everybody has said, that this, there is nothing wrong with having a discussion. This is Canada, that's what we do. In a democracy, we try and figure it out. Now, the one thing that hasn't been brought out of the shadows is how much this will cost. When I vote, I will vote that we should have the discussion. If it comes down after, when the costs come down, that doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to support it at that point. Right now, if we were sitting here talking about it, great. But then we need to know what the costs are going to be.
Okay, thank you. Is it time for the next question? I think it's time for the next question. So you had your question, you were waiting patiently in line. I'm told that if you speak closer to the mic, there's less chance of feedback.
All right, then. How's this? All right. Good evening. I'm quite concerned at the loss of some of our viable and certainly distinctive buildings in the inner city, ones that have helped to define us, define our neighborhood, and give us that important sense of place. I'm wondering whether what you folks would have done as councillors, had you been our councillor, to have avoided the type of situation that has led to the loss of the tannery buildings and to the imminent demolition of Barra Castle.
Okay, thank you for the question. We'll start with Graham Yates.
Thank you. Kitchener's heritage, and in particular its heritage properties, are of grave importance to me. That's why I sat on Kitchener Heritage Advisory Committee to City Hall. You may remember a photo on the front of the record with a bunch of people protesting the removal of the Lang Tannery support buildings. I was the rather large gentleman in the back of that photo. Heritage, we need to very clearly define as more than just being an old building. We need to define it as being an old building that has a distinct effect on the look of the city, something with which the city would be less without. Once we've done that, it becomes much easier to get these buildings on the designated lists And once they're protected, we don't have to worry as much. Heritage, particularly, again, in building conservation, is very important to the environment. The brick already laid is the most environmental brick possible. Reuse of buildings, adaptive reuse of buildings is fundamental. Thank you.
Okay. Debbie Chapman.
Yes, I think it's a very pertinent question for the for Ward 9 candidates, because after all, there are a lot of heritage buildings and areas in this ward. I'm a strong supporter of adaptive reuse of heritage buildings or existing buildings, for that matter, of all sorts. In fact, our neighborhood association, it's a long story, but we were given a building to turn into a community center, and we were going to do that, saving the city thousands of dollars, millions of dollars, in fact, rather than, you know, building a community center. We were willing to work with an existing building. I think there need to be incentive programs to conserve and restore heritage buildings, which I think we are not quite, we don't do enough of that right now. As far as the Lang Tannery property, I think the city failed us by not doing its own heritage impact assessment of the property before allowing for the demolition to go ahead. And I think, you know, we have to look beyond the developer's assessment and their resources to tell us the state of these buildings. I think we've got good examples of how buildings can be reused and reused in similar ways and other ways. Such as the Kaufman Lofts and the Tannery building that they did preserve. I've worked to help preserve St. John's Public School. I worked closely with the residents on that project, and also in the distant past with the KCI, the preservation of KCI.
Okay, thank you. David Kuhn.
Heritage preservation is something that is very important, and as Debbie said, I mean, obviously we have so many buildings in Ward 9 that, you know, need our attention, and doing what we can to make sure that older buildings and historic buildings are reused. So, say, you know, an old school, if, you know, it's not being used as a school or whatnot, that we turn it into something where it can be used. Now, people have brought up the Tannery buildings, and, you know, I think what's going on there right now is that we are seeing a lot of development, a lot of positive development that is happening. And, you know, we're seeing, I believe, a doctor's office is in there now. We're going to see restaurants and businesses, which is great because we want to encourage growth in Ward 9 and we want to do what we can to draw people into the ward. So I think that's very important. And as we can see, the skyline has not changed drastically because of what they did choose to demolish. Now, and I have talked with city officials and other people involved in the project. So I think as long as we do that, and that we keep, you know, we keep our eye on what is going on and what is going to happen, you know, that we can ensure that we do preserve what needs to be preserved. And I also believe that in order to ensure that, we have to have community discussions and talking with people to gauge their opinions on what they want to see happen. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Sandy McFarland.
It's a good question. I've had this question asked to me a lot in Ward 9. It's very unique to Ward 9, to be honest. I guarantee you that question doesn't get asked in Chicopee, in other places. But that's why I love living in this area. The old buildings, the old houses, the old parks. I believe that we need to do a better job at reclaiming the buildings as far as using them for not their original purpose, obviously. A great example of Victoria School just on the street here. But we need to be sure on every building. And this has to come from people that specialize in heritage and this actual structure of the buildings. I think sometimes we romanticize these 100-year-old buildings. Some of them just aren't functional. Now, I was very opposed to the tannery being torn down, and one of my main points there was that it was turned into a parking lot. So it wasn't it's not like they used it for something else anyway. I'm fighting to not have as many people driving downtown to work. I want them to live here as well. So I think we need to be really careful on the buildings that we are designating, but I believe that we can do that and save some of the great buildings in this area.
Thank you. Frank Etherington.
Thanks for the question. I would have done everything possible to save both of those buildings, the buildings that help provide the soul of our city. The Working Center, this building, is a great example of what can be done to preserve and make effective use of heritage properties. On this section of Queen, the agency has provided some tender loving care to upgrade several old buildings and turn them into transitional low-cost housing for about 30 people in 14 units. Elsewhere in the building, space is provided for numerous community services operated by the agency. If elected, I will try to follow the lead of the Working Center. I will fight to revive and retain heritage buildings and districts in Ward 9 and elsewhere in the city where development always seems to be given priority over efforts to preserve historic buildings. For too long, we have had a mayor and council willing to abdicate responsibility for heritage buildings that should be treated as business assets that add so much character and depth to our city. I would also work with MPPs to try to make certain council meets the terms of Ontario's Heritage Act, which is very weak at the moment. I would ensure that public meetings are held well in advance of proposals to demolish any heritage building. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next, we can take a question from the floor that was written out. The question is, if you weren't running for municipal council right now, who would you vote for and why? Well, start that with Debbie Chapman. Lucky you.
In this ward?
Yep.
Or anywhere? Can I change wards?
I think the question
that's,
was
that's an unfair
intended,
question. Mm. I don't have an answer. I don't think that can be answered. Yeah, no, it's not a fair question. I am running, exactly, and I vote for myself. That sounds terrible. I guess I would consult with the residents and find out who they thought was the most viable option, and I would go with that. How's that?
Okay, thank you. David Kuhn.
How do you follow that? I mean, you know... Well, given that I don't currently live in the ward, I guess I could use that one. I think that is an unfair question. I mean, we all have similar, you know, reasons for running. We all want to help the residents of Ward 9, which I think is very noble. I guess, and in terms of, any one issue, I really can't say one issue because... In terms of what would affect my vote is the opinion of LRT, and a lot of us have similar positions, that it's too expensive and that we need to look at other ways of, working it out and not making the taxpayers foot the bill. Now, in terms of that, like I said, I can't really pick anyone on that issue. So I guess I would pick... none of the above.
Okay, thank you.
Tough question. I was going to say Deb, but she didn't say me, so now I'm not going to. really tough question. I'd probably vote for Frank because his wife used to babysit me, and I really like her.
And I would vote for Sandy. Because I hear that on the side he's a stand-up comedian, and we need some funny stuff at council. Thank you.
I got to say, I love this question. If nothing else, it illustrates that you're not always going to be comfortable with the questions set in front of you at council. There are going to be awkward questions. There are going to be tough ones. So I'll be straightforward. I would vote for Frank. Frank strikes me as a very honorable man. We disagree on a number of issues, but I know that he will always honestly state his position. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, candidates. We have time for a few more questions. So I will, do you have one that you would like to come up and say? Okay, so we'll take one more question spoken, and then we'll have maybe time for one more written question.
I have a resident of Ward 9 for many, many years, and have found it to be one of the less and most underserviced areas in this in the city ward system, among a couple others. But I'm wondering, among you candidates, are any one of you prepared to stand up and be your own person and not follow the trend that we have seen in the council in this past four-year term, who have just followed the lead of certain individuals who had the loudest voice or had maybe possibly more knowledge. I'm interested in what your own position will be on transparency and honesty to the taxpayers who put you there.
Okay, thank you for the question. We'll start with David Kuhn.
Thanks, great question. You know what, I have no friends at City Hall, so I got no one to impress. And I, you know, I definitely think that is it is important, as I've said, that that the representative for Ward 9 does speak for the residents of Ward 9, and in that regard, you know, I would do my very best to talk with residents and find out what's important to them and what they would like to see happen and not just follow someone else's lead on City Council. Thanks.
Thank you. Sandy McFarlane.
From day one, transparency and accountability from your councillor has been my main topic of conversation. I believe in the last 4 years, the councillors in City Hall have been very stagnant, and they're making decisions without us. The tannery is a great example. They knew what the citizens felt about it, and they took the position of developers for their own self-interest, really. They've become very complacent. I'm not the guy that's going to be in the corner and be quiet. I'm running for this to be accountable to the people that have voted for me. And that's been my stance from day one, that the transparency in City Hall has been terrible. I don't think they've been accountable for the decisions that they've made. And I promise you that I definitely will not be like that. My thing is to talk, to let the voices of the people, the voices of the residents of this ward be heard in City Hall. Thanks.
Thank you. Frank Etherington.
In my column, I frequently criticized City Council for not being transparent, for meeting in a way that I believe is behind, not quite closed doors, meeting by BlackBerry, meeting by telephone. I've been in council, I've watched them come into council on a very important issue where you expect some debate, and there is no debate, there's just a decision. I think the decision is made outside of the council chamber, and I intend to try to put a stop to that. I want increased transparency, and I'm not in favor of the status quo. I intend to collaborate, cooperate, but I hope I'll be able to shake things up along with the other new councillors. Made me laugh when one person at one door said that he thought, if you'll excuse the poetry, that I would be Mayor Zaire's worst nightmare. Thank you.
Thank you. Graham Yates.
Each month I sit at council. I feel if you want to do a job, you really ought to know as much about it as you can. So I attend the meetings. Something, sadly, which I do as a bit of a minority. I'm shocked quite often by the number of unanimous decisions and the lack of recorded votes required. To see that much agreement over some very fundamental and contentious issues does not speak well of a democratic system. We require a certain amount of friction to have honesty in our system. I was, we'll use the word blessed, with a certain frank honesty, a certain polite, respectful, but frank honesty. And I would certainly be asking for more recorded votes. That way the people know exactly who did what and when. Thank you.
Thank you. Debbie Chapman.
Yeah, over the last 4 years, I've done a lot of work with community members. And for all of that work, there's always it's always expected of me, or has been expected of me, to be very transparent and honest about things. And I would do the same at City Council. I am not a yes person. In fact, I have enemies at City Hall because of things that we've been trying to push through and been unsuccessful at doing. So I continue to push for things for the needs of our community, of our neighborhood association, and I will continue to do that. And some of these things are very simple. One of the issues that I'm dealing with right now with city staff is about a youth drop-in program. We've got a youth drop-in program for high school students. The Neighborhood Association has agreed to run a youth drop-in program for grade 7 and 8. And the city initially told us that they would run a pilot project for the primary school kids to ensure that all levels of youth were covered in these youth drop-in programs. And the city has now come back to us and said, well, actually, we're not going to do the pilot project unless you, as a neighborhood association, guarantee us that in a year from now you'll be running all three programs. So that's the type of thing that I've had to confront with City Hall. I don't give up. I am not giving up on their response to the youth drop-in programs. And I do not give up on the prospect of having community space in our neighborhood in the future and in other parts of the ward. I don't see this as a neighborhood responsibility. I see it as a ward responsibility, and I would continue to work for the full ward in the same capacity. Okay. Thank you.
That is, I think, if we're going to finish on time, that is all the time we have for questions. So if we can move to closing statements. Each candidate has 2 minutes to wow the audience with their closing statements, and we'll start with Sandy McFarland.
Thank you. Again, thank you very much for coming tonight. There are a lot of issues that need to be addressed by the incoming council. Now, all these issues come down to two factors. One, transparency and accountability in all finances. How can this city keep asking for more of your money when you don't know where it's going to? I will take the discussions and the decisions out of the back room of City Hall and bring them to the people that we are accountable to. As your counselor, I will change this culture of non-transparency and be completely transparent in all financial decisions facing the taxpayers. The taxpayers need to know exactly how their money is being spent and have a voice in how it is spent. Secondly, we need jobs and new businesses in this ward. If we don't improve our local economy and address the unemployment rates, all these issues that we have been talking about tonight are going to suffer. We have an opportunity right now to bring new businesses and new companies into the downtown core, creating a vibrant city with people that live, work, and play in it. There are some numbers that just need to be addressed. An almost 10% unemployment rate. The cost of buying a home in this city has gone up almost 4% in 1 year. Local taxes have doubled the rate of inflation. Water and sewer fees have gone up more than 50%. The numbers just aren't adding up. Our friends, our families, our neighbors are struggling to pay bills. They're losing their job, and nobody seems to be addressing these issues. We need jobs. We need to invite professionals and new businesses into this ward. We need a complete financial transparency in our municipal government. We need to feel safe in our neighborhoods, and we need a vibrant downtown where residents live, work, and play. If you want the status quo, if you like how things are being run, don't vote for me. But if you want somebody that's going to speak for you, and every day I'm your counselor, I will make sure your voice is heard in City Hall. Vote for Sandy McFarland on October 25th. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, Frank Etherington.
Thanks again for coming. Ward 9 residents deserve a full-time, knowledgeable councillor who is familiar with local concerns, knows City Hall, and will have the courage to make clear, strong decisions on some very difficult upcoming issues. Through my newspaper columns, I've shown I've prepared to make those stands, and after listening to residents, I will continue to do so as your counselor. I will be accountable for City Hall spending and always be available to the people of Ward 9. I will cooperate with other councillors and the mayor, but as I already said, I won't be pushed around. As I advocate for Ward 9 residents, I have no intention of becoming part of any status quo council clique meeting behind closed doors. I want transparent decision-making that follows healthy, open debate. As your councillor, I would like the opportunity to follow the excellent example set by the community-minded people here at the Working Center, who show so much caring, proactive leadership in our city. By nurturing diverse neighborhoods like Ward 9, I want to help create an inclusive community, a community for both newcomers and longtime residents where no one is left out or left behind. As I said, thank you very much for coming. Please vote in the October 25 election. And when you do, I would very much appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Graham Yates.
In 13 days, when we Kitchenerites travel to the polls in what I hope will be record numbers, I think it's very important that you not only consider the experience of the candidates in front of you, but also the importance of this particular election. We're at a crossroads in this city. You've no doubt heard the 25.8% voter turnout being bandied about in the media and this evening. That 25.8% only refers to the voter list. It actually represents only 17.8% of actual residents once you take into account things like citizen requirements and age limits. That simply is insufficient. The average in the province was over 35% in our last election. We have to get people out. We have to do everything we can. That's why I'm very proud to announce that on the 20th of October, I'm going to be hosting a Get Out the Vote concert on Highland Road. You can find all the details on my website, www.grahamyates.ca. It's a non-biased evening. There's not going to be any Vote for Graham message or any signs. It's just going to be about getting out that civic participation. I hope you all do vote, and I hope I can earn yours. Thank you.
Thank you. Debbie Chapman.
Yes, first I'd like to thank you all for your questions. The city of possibilities that I envision includes all of you. It is a city where we have direct participation in the political process, a city where the needs of all the stakeholders are balanced, a city that invites people to leave their cars at home, a welcoming place for people of all walks of life. That is, my top three priorities are: one, political participation by all residents; two, balanced community and development needs; and three, a greener city. We're living in a period of economic hardship, which has impacted the lives of many of us. There's a clear need for job creation and retraining. As we move forward, we need to ensure that all sectors of society are included in our plan. My years of community engagement, problem solving, and listening to people will help us through this difficult period and bring us nearer to that city of possibilities. As we lead into the final weeks of the campaign, I encourage you to ask yourself the following questions. Which candidate has the most community and political experience? Which one has worked with residents to solve real issues? And which one best represents your vision? I ask for your support on October 25th so that together we can make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you. And David Kuhn.
Now more than ever, Kitchener and the residents of Ward 9 can't afford to have a rubber stamp council. We can't afford to have our representatives just doing whatever they feel to do. I will work to communicate with residents to ensure accountability, accessibility to myself as well as City Council, And I will also work to ensure further economic growth in the downtown core through removing red tape that inhibits new and existing business from operating the way that they should to draw business and to draw people into the ward. I think that it is important that City Council makes sound financial decisions in consultation with the needs and the wants of the residents of Kitchener. And to do that, again, I want to talk with as many people as I can during my time on council and be an extension of the residents of Ward 9 on council. And so please give me your vote on October 25th, and I promise that over the next term, you will have the strongest possible voice for Ward 9 on City Council. My website is davidkuhn.ca, and thank you once again for coming out tonight, and thank you again to the Working Center for hosting this debate, as well as to all my fellow candidates who have come out to communicate with you, and thank you.
Okay. Thank you to all of the candidates for participating and all of the audience for your questions. I'm sorry we weren't able to get to a big stack of questions that were left behind, but that means that there's lots of things that you can talk about during the meet and greet. Before we break for that, I'd like to tell you about some upcoming events. So we have a couple of other debates. If you have any friends who live in Ward 10 across King Street, then we're having a debate for that, or an all-candidates meeting for that tomorrow. And then next Tuesday, we have Kitchener Regional Council representatives. So Regional Council is the regional level of government, and that should be a pretty interesting time as well. We will be having, if we got lucky, thank you for putting up with our sound system, but if we're lucky, we've actually recorded this, and we will have this up on some website that'll be linked to from the Working Center. If you're interested in the audio and you want a personal email when that's up, then you can let me know. There's literature and also looks like bowls of goodies at the back there. And we can now break and conclude the formal portion of evening, of our evening. Thank you very much.